If you're starting with an in-flight team and you're trying to get them more agile, the easiest place to start is the stand-up. Why? Well, it's the smallest, most frequent, and possibly the most important ceremony for moving work forward. So if you start there, you can build the other practices by generally introducing backlogs, sprints, sprint planning, and sprint maintenance. You can fold in retrospectives and reviews. And if you start by aggressively cutting waste, getting their hour-long status meeting down to a 15-minute or less stand-up, by the end of your first week, you'll have introduced massive value into the system. But to do that, you need to know how to own the room. Let's learn how on this week's episode of the Badass Agile Podcast. Greetings, team. Welcome to the Badass Agile Podcast. I'm your host, Chris Williams. Hey guys, welcome back and thanks for joining as always. I'm grateful for each and every one of you, so thank you for those who tune in week after week. Happy to see you here. Now, I'm all for flat hierarchies and self-organizing teams. Nothing about those principles, though, says you can't have a guide through the chaos. And that's what a scrum master, and particularly an agile coach, are expected to do. Yet, so often, we haven't been given the skills to do what I call owning the room, which means building trust quickly, inspiring people to behave in agile ways. Well, what's the secret to owning the room? But first, let's remember why we're here. To create an elite tribe of leaders who truly serve their clients and communities by doing what matters and what works, relentlessly chasing value and excellence like a badass. There are so many resources about what you need to do to be agile, but we're focused on who you need to become in order to lead teams. Let's pursue and perfect those fundamentals to create an unstoppable force in this industry. And if this helps you, tell your friends and feel free to leave your comments on iTunes. All right, so you've been charged with transforming a team to agile. Lucky you. The team is already formed though. The team's in flight and they're using old school ways of delivering things. So they're doing long, unproductive meetings. They're converging gently and slowly to an approved spec, which when it's finally polished and entirely signed off, can proceed from the analysis phase and then finally to the doing phase. They might even be using little bits of Agile by implementing some Scrum techniques or post-it notes on a board, but in any case, they're a long way from glory. Well, how do you get them started? How do you get them to reorient, change their way of thinking to an Agile way of thinking, without stopping the whole machine, dragging them into training, deprogramming their current belief systems, and basically starting over? How are you going to get everyone doing Agile when nobody believes it can be done or should be done? How do you not only topple the resistance, but conquer the massive mindset change, not to mention the training on techniques and roles that you need to do before everyone even understands what they're supposed to do next? All right, don't get overwhelmed. And remember that a badass knows how to break big things like that into small things. And by the way, that's also an agile theme. So let's start with one small piece. Start with the stand-up. But to do that, to latch onto an existing culture and start making subtle shifts, you're going to have to be able to lead them. And let's not kid anyone. Even if there's an enterprise mandate to do agile. When you arrive on the scene, there's probably been zero training, zero motivation to change, zero coaching through the change, and you're probably an outsider, right? You might be a contractor, you might be new. So you're facing a room of mostly unsupportive or surprised people. Meet the resistance. It'll be there at every level too. And all it takes is one loud or important person in that room to inject just a shadow of doubt into the rest of the team, and they'll all follow that person. So if you can't lead, you're dead in the water. You're going to need to know how to own that team room. Because in the beginning, there is always fear and confusion. Nobody knows how to do differently. Nobody is comfortable with change, and no one feels empowered to change. So when fear and confusion reign like that, The second best thing you can do is be calm and certain. The best thing you can do is show your team how to be calm and certain for themselves. So this is how you do it. It's actually easy. Start small. Start with minimally invasive techniques that prove the point that small shifts can make really big differences. So start with a meeting. Here's your first tip. Don't ever ask for permission. You can't come in and ask for permission to lead. The secret to leadership, as we know, is to just do it. You just go first. So while it might be helpful to walk into that room and have a pre-qualified title like Scrum Master or Agile Coach to give you like just enough authority to have people listen to you for an hour, you don't need that. It might also be nice to have some kind of pedigree, some experience, some education, something that lets people know that you've been there before and you've presided over victory, but you don't need that either. All you have to do is walk into a meeting room with the desire to serve, which is not to be confused with the desire to have power over people, right? And then the sense of the basic agile principles that you want the team to start adopting and just apply them to a simple team meeting. So what we're going to do is take the agile principles and shrink them down so that you can practice them in a 1-hour session. And which principles are those? Focus relentlessly on value. Do focused work. Be visionary. That means know where you're going and begin with the end in mind. Continuously inspect and adapt. Relentlessly cut waste. Focus on finished working things. Empower teams to do their best work. So wait, we're going to do all of those in an hour? We're going to do all of those in an hour. And it starts with this simple sentence. Just you walk into a meeting room and you say, hey, everyone, before we start, can we get clear on what we want to walk away with from this meeting? Now, that simple statement does two things. Number one, it forces the team to be a little bit visionary, an hour's worth of visionary. And it forces them to have a focus on the end goal. Now, it also should focus them to be delivery focused. How so? You might have to add the following comment. Let's think about what we want to walk away from this session having completed or delivered. What do we want to leave this room within our hands that we didn't have before? So that simple question of what things, it's a little bit different than saying, what do we want to get out of this meeting, but what things do we want to leave this session with? That forces people to think about the stuff that they're making, not the stuff that they're doing. And there's a big difference. We really want to break the habit of saying stuff like, we want to talk about a strategy. Instead, guide people to produce like a battle plan with names and dates. Now, that might include a discussion about strategy, but the discussion about strategy on its own is not the end goal because the discussion is valueless. The tactical plan, on the other hand, is the end goal because it is valuable. So instead of working on a document, for example, you might say, well, if we can't get it all done in one sitting, let's insist on finishing chapters, not just working on the document, but finishing a piece, finish a section, and define finished as peer-reviewed and checked into a shared drive while you're at it. So once you've come up with all the objectives, whatever they may be, and again, make sure those objectives are delivery-focused, things we're going to make, not things we're going to do. So put it in terms of finished stuff, not loose activities, and you'll end up with 4 or 5 of them on the board. Now, true to Agile principle and Scrum technique, someone has got to prioritize them. So if you have a product owner, awesome. If not, the team can work together as an empowered unit to decide what's the most important thing to get out of the session. So you are deciding on the priorities. You're doing the most important things first. One of these items has to be the most important thing to walk away with. Literally, if you do nothing else, we commit to the stretch target of getting this one thing done. Now, a point of detail. Can these priorities change in the course of the meeting? Sure. Do you have to achieve them all by the end of the meeting in order for the meeting to be successful? No. Should we try to achieve the impossible though and squeeze like an hour's worth of work into 10 minutes? Like try to get this down to stand-up type size? I think you should. I think that pushing the team to do the impossible or even the uncommon is exactly what you should do. Because I want you to live a life of distinction. I want you to be consistently looking for ways to break the 4-minute mile. And this is one of those ways. It is absolutely okay to say to the team, hey guys, we got a list of 4 things we want to do. We probably won't get to all of them today. So let's all agree that if we only walk away with the first one, this session will still have been worth it. Now, just a note, make sure that that does not equal permission to ramble on, to waste the session by talking about things that don't matter before coming to conclusions or committing to work, which, by the way, is probably what's going to happen in your first few sessions because people are used to the old way of doing things, in which the best way to get through the day is to talk about stuff until enough certainty has been reached with enough consensus that it's 100% safe to go forward. No. This isn't good. The badass won't settle for that. Instead, as teams start to go off the rails, you now have a compass that's written right on the board behind you for everyone to see. So you can inject anytime you want the following statement. Hey guys, time out for a sec. Does this discussion that we're having right now move us any closer to the goals that we agreed to on the board? Now point to the board behind you. If the discussion is not actively supporting the delivery of those objectives, the finished stuff that we said we wanted to have in our hands by the end of the session, and we all agreed to it, we're all bought in, then the conversation has to shift focus right now. Even if the team pushes back and insists that a certain conversation has to be allowed to happen, there's a few things you can try. So you could ask, is the reason why we're having this spin-off discussion because the right people required to make an authoritative decision are not in the room? If that's a go, you can say, then I think we should break this off and come back at a time when those people are in the session. The second one, you might ask, do we need to go out and get more information before we can have this meeting in a meaningful way? Maybe we've jumped the gun. Maybe we're talking about things that we don't know enough about. Or you might ask, could we lay out all the issues, all the pros and cons, all the factors that must be weighed, and come to a decision anyway, despite the fact that the right people or the right information are not here? Could we do that in the next 5 or 10 minutes? Whatever the case may be, if the right people aren't in the room, you got to get them there. You may find that having the right people in the room, even just for a few minutes, is enough for those people to actually say to the team, you know what, you guys are doing great work here. I feel like you are empowered to make a call on this. In some high trust environments, you see leaders do that quite often. You know what, guys? I trust you. You go ahead and make a call. If the right person's not in the room, though, rather than waiting, could we instead make a suggestion or a proposal that the right people could confirm later? So if we absolutely must push something up the chain, why don't we at least make a recommendation so that we don't spin off another hour-long meeting or discussion weighing all of the options? Either of those options, bringing someone into the room, even for a short time, or pushing forward a proposal, would allow you to move forward so that we don't hijack the active progress in the room. Another technique you can use to keep people on course is to set timers. If you have 4 objectives on the wall and it's important to at least get to some of them, not just the first one, you can try assigning timelines for each one of them. Set a timer, and then go. As the time approaches 5 minutes to done, you can let the team know, hey guys, we have a couple minutes left on this discussion. Do we need to take this offline? Do we need more time? Or can we wrap this up in 5 minutes? Now, this technique rolls up to the objective of doing focused work and adaptive planning altogether in its simplest form. If the team decides they need more time, that means you're going to sacrifice one of the other objectives. So you ask everyone, is it okay to add another 10 minutes to the timer? And if they say yes, remind them, we're going to lose progress on one of the other ones. Is that cool? And confirm that that's okay with the product owner or the team. This keeps things not only democratic, but it's a living example of how a product owner operates every day with constant trade-offs between time, speed, performance, and scope. It also keeps people updated on changing environments and expectations. That's another Agile Scrum tactic. There's nothing wrong with not meeting your targets. The only time that's bad is if you don't communicate the change early and often. So by using this technique, you're doing exactly that. And by the end of this session, you'll find a few things may have happened. Number one, teams will have learned that you can actually accomplish a ton in an hour if you stay focused, if you stay adaptive, and if you focus on high-value delivery. Teams might also learn that this session could have been a lot shorter because we realize how often we go off track, how often we allow conversations to spin, how often we realize that we're not going to come to a conclusion or delivering value in the room and we should stop and wait until we have everything we need to do so. So teams may learn by extension that this whole team and this whole session could have been way more productive if the right people had been invited and the right homework had been done in advance. So lesson learned for next time. Any one of these three learnings represents a massive potential to improve the productivity of your sessions. And people often comment to me that they really love the pace and the aggressiveness of that kind of approach. And don't forget, finally, at the end of the session, you could add one more Agile Scrum principle, which is running a mini retrospective and ask people what went well, what could have been done better, and people will tell you if they like the new format or not. The team can use those suggestions to further improve and tailor the next session. But notice at this point, we're no longer talking about whether this session format is a good idea as the new way forward, are we? It's not just a maybe. This is now the new way, and through your leadership, we have changed the way these meetings function. So finish the session by addressing the retrospective comments and saying, sounds like this went pretty well. This could save us a lot of time. Let's move it forward next time, make it better. Now you will have to chair this meeting for probably four or more instances before it becomes a habit. By that time, hopefully someone in the room will emerge as an obvious leader who can take over the chair function and prevent the team from backsliding into old meeting habits. It could take as many as 3 to 6 weeks before the team gets it really right and has zero risk of reverting to the old ways of doing it. But this is how it spreads. You might find that after you've done this kind of session with the team a few times, they'll automatically start shortening the time frame to half an hour, or they'll be willing to structure the sessions to deliver more value in the same amount of time. But either way, the team will be able to comment empirically on the difference between the old way and the new way that translates into savings. And this, guys, is how you tackle the resistance. You simply light a fire that others want to gather around. Because once the team and the leadership have seen how much time and money you can save, once they've seen how productive you can get, they'll be far more willing to move on to next steps in our collective agile journey. So now we could, for example, learn how to take a backlog of items and use that backlog in those working sessions to retire items in the backlog. And from there, you can teach prioritization, sprint planning, and you're on your way to changing that team's culture forever, one piece at a time, and then on to the next team. Folks, thanks for listening. You can reach out at badassagile.com or find me on Twitter at badass_agile. I'll see you next time, and until then, stay badass.